Hello and welcome to episode 287 of Five and Dive. It is Thursday, May 18th. I'm your host, Patrick Dubuque, editor and co-president pro tempore of Baseball Prospectus. Joining me today is not Craig Goldstein, who is busy acclimating new Craigs to this world. Instead, I'm joined by lead prospect writer Jeffrey Paternostro and associate editor Janice Searle. Comrades, hello.
Third time's the charm.
Oh, boy. I'll write shorter intros next time. By the way, episode 287, to celebrate episode 287, that is the career on-base percentage of Francisco Mejia, Rougned Odor, and Ozzie Guillen, and the number of grounded into double plays of Yadier Molina. So there you go. Make that a theme for a couple of weeks. So today, hi. Hi. How are you guys doing?
Watching day baseball, yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and leap right in. Topic one, we are going to continue our increasingly strenuous collection of Chase Anderson facts. Chase Anderson was recently signed by the Colorado Rockies. And on May 16th, he got a start, his first start of the year against the Cincinnati Reds, pitched five scoreless innings, allowed two base runners, a single and a walk, struck out three. So Chase Anderson, momentum is building. So for Chase Anderson facts today, what I chose to do, and I apologize a little in advance because this is a little gross. I mean, I apologize because, we don't want to encourage this behavior, but also it's something if we're going to do it, we're going to do it now. It's going to get increasingly less valuable and less funny over time. So what I did is I took Google's AI Bard and asked it some questions about Chase Anderson, and I'm going to give it, it gave me some answers. Mm-hmm. So I'll just go ahead and read some of those to you guys. So first of all, I asked, why is Chase Anderson? The response was, here are some of his accomplishments. Set career highs in wins and innings pitched in 2017. Has a career ERA of 4.53. Has been traded to four different teams in his career. Is a good pitcher who has had some success in the MLB. He says the MLB, which already, is a hard worker and is always trying to improve his game. Is a valuable member of any team. So that's why. Chase Anderson.
Next question. I wrote all of that on my self-evaluation 1 year for my corporate job.
I want to know who Google Bard thinks is a hard worker and a good player, but not a valuable member of a team. Like, what'd that guy do?
I don't know. Yeah, like, it's public information. Like, maybe it has access to people's scouting reports that we don't know. Does Chase Anderson believe that birds exist? The answer, there is no public information about Chase Anderson's belief about birds. He has never made any public statements about birds, and there are no news articles or social media posts that mention his beliefs. It is possible that he believes that birds exist, but it is also possible that he does not. What color is Chase Anderson's beard? Chase Anderson's beard is brown. He has a full, well-trimmed beard that is often styled in a goatee. His beard is a popular topic of conversation among baseball fans, and many people believe that it is one of his most distinguishing features. Hopefully this is at least a recommendation against AI as we use it for content. What spells can Chase Anderson cast at level one? Chase Anderson is a baseball player, not a wizard. He cannot cast spells. Fair enough, you know, one for Google. What is Chase Anderson's hair worth? Chase Anderson's hair is not for sale. It is a part of his body and he values it. He has never expressed any interest in selling his hair, and it is unlikely that anyone would be willing to pay a significant amount of money for it. Anderson's hair is not particularly unique or valuable. It is brown and straight. It is of average
length. They just said he valued it.
He does. There are millions of people in the world with similar hair.
I think O. Henry is probably safe.
Anderson's hair is also not particularly useful. It cannot be used to make clothes. It cannot be used to build a shelter. And it cannot be used to make a fire. In short, there is no reason why anyone would want to buy Chase Anderson's hair. It is not valuable. It is not unique. And it is not useful.
I'm glad to know that he's not going to Madeline's scenario, was all I'm saying. Sorry. Where he's selling his hair.
Yeah, there was Jeff Nelson tried to sell his bone chips one time on eBay, and they shut it down.
That's cool.
It was a body part. What would Chase Anderson beer be like? Chase Anderson is a professional baseball player, is known for his hard work and dedication. He is also a fan of craft beer. If Chase Anderson had his own beer, it would likely be a light, refreshing beer that is perfect for enjoying after a long day of playing baseball. It would be brewed with high-quality ingredients and would be sure to please even the most discerning beer drinkers. Here is a possible recipe for a Chase Anderson beer. 50% pale ale malt, 25% wheat malt, 25% Munich malt, 1 ounce Centennial hops, 60 minutes, 1 ounce Centennial hops, 10 minutes, 1 ounce Centennial hops, 0 minutes. American ale yeast. This recipe would produce a light, refreshing beer with a slightly hoppy flavor. The Centennial hops would give the beer a citrusy aroma and flavor, and the Munich malt would add a touch of sweetness. The American ale yeast would give the beer a crisp finish. Jeffrey, would you drink Chase Anderson beer?
That sounds fine to me. It's like 80 degrees out lately. It sounds like a good late spring, early summer beer.
Okay. All right, two more. If Chase Anderson were a country, what country would he be? Overall, if Chase Anderson were a country, he would be Canada.
very assertive. Yeah. Very convincing, yeah.
They're both hardworking, dedicated, and team-oriented people who are a bit of a prankster and a loner. They also both love nature.
Team-oriented and a loner, yeah. Okay.
Do you believe in Chase Anderson? I believe that Chase Anderson has the potential to be a great pitcher. He has the talent, the work ethic, and the attitude to succeed in the major leagues. I am excited to see what he can do in the future. So thank you, Google, for sharing all that stuff about Chase Anderson. Jeffrey, we are moving on to our second topic, which is a nice segue because it is Chase Anderson's team, the Colorado Rockies. Sorry we missed you. So you picked the Rockies to talk about because Craig didn't. So what do we have to say about the Rockies?
Well, this topic is usually done because it's, you know, it's 6 weeks into the season. You talk about the good team. You talk about the bad team. You talk about the surprises, both positive and negative. And the Rockies are just the Rockies. They are as respectably bad as the Rockies usually are. They're on a 68-win pace. They are 20th in DRC+, 22nd in DRA-. So again, respectably bad. Below average, but not awful. The interesting thing to me for the Rockies, despite playing their home games in Coors, they only have one regular hitting over 300, Elias Diaz, as we mentioned on the Tuesday show, and CJ Cron is their leads their team in home runs with 6, despite being on the IL for the last week or two. Randall Grichuk, Charlie Blackman, and Chris Bryant are all on the Rockies. I think you probably knew that, but maybe you didn't because nobody really paid attention to the Rockies, including us, and they've all been fine. They've all been above league average hitters. Grichuk got a late start to the season, but it's been good. The starting pitching, Kyle Freeland is having a very nice contact suppression season. Herman Marquez is having Tommy John surgery. Every other pitcher is pitching exactly as you would expect a Colorado Rockies starter to pitch. But their bullpen's been pretty good. I actually wrote about one of their relievers today at BP. But Brad Hand, also in this bullpen, which is not something I remembered. And then I have a question. First, just either you can give general thoughts on the 2023 Colorado Rockies. But something I was thinking about for this segment is usually by now something weird would have happened, either involving Bud Black or a player or Dick Monfort or other members of the Monfort family in that front office. Something would have been like, oh, that's just the Rockies. Are the Rockies no longer weird enough to be interesting?
So one thing I will, you neglected one thing in your description of the Rockies, and we do need to give them credit. They made room for Brenton Doyle.
He's been good. He has not actually been good, but he's been Brenton Doyle with hitting a few extra home runs. You
know, they needed to leave room for him, and they did. And they did. The Rockies are interesting because they are so uninteresting. It feels like you mentioned something in the outline about how, you know, will they even make a trade at the deadline? Because of course, you know, famously Trevor Story, they did not in the past. Like, I don't know if they need to, because I don't know if they feel they need to. I think that this is exactly what they want to be. Like, I don't know if we ever need to hear from the Monforts ever again, because I feel like they have perfected themselves. I know they're going to, but they don't need to, because they could just do this forever. You have the MVP machine, you have all of these analytical, you know, workplaces that are designed to optimize, and the Rockies are optimized. They're just optimized for this exact thing that they are. I don't know. Like, there'll be another Jerks and Profar. there'll be, you know, it's hard to believe there'll be another Charlie Blackman, but there'll be another Charlie Blackman. They'll just keep doing this.
Yeah, I see that apparently they're open to a Salt Lake City team, which seems like a bad idea for them, kind of, compared to considering, I don't know, I feel like part of what makes the Rockies popular is there's not that many teams that close to their little quad state area, right? But that's, is Charlie Montfort Dick Montfort's son?
Probably. Sterling Montfort, who's their pro scouting director, is definitely Dick Montfort's son.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it says why Rocky's owner, and then it's saying Charlie Montfort, and I've
Yeah, Charlie Montfort's the brother, I think, from the meat packing conglomerate. I think he used to be the chairman, and then Dick took over at some
Yeah,
point.
1982 University of Utah graduate. He's got to be the son.
I think they're brothers. Charles is the younger brother of
Charles is the younger brother. Okay, there's a lot of Montforts running around out there. Yeah, I mean, they draw well, right? Even though it's like kind of a cool park to go to and a nice experience and a big stadium. And, you know, occasionally baseball's played there. And it's not always awful baseball, right? The thing that drives me, like, this is like a Mandela effect thing for me. The Rockies were in the playoffs like 4 years ago.
Yeah. almost kind of every 4 or 5 years.
They
just have their little run. I feel like the Mariners wish they could be the Rockies in some sense. Like, I think that if the Mariners had like broken through a couple of times in their 20 years of failure and just had that every 5, 6 years, you have an interesting team. If something like something's going to happen.
Like, if like the Peter Burgos defensive wizard team had worked out and they won a couple more games that year or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They are the best storefront facade of a baseball team you could make, I think.
Here's a fun little game. Elias Diaz, he began his career in 2015 and had two games for the Pirates, who were actually good in 198 games that year. He has not played for a team that's won more than 78 games since. Do we think he ever plays for a 500 team again?
You know, that's a good question. Like,
I don't know if he's a good enough defender to like hang around as a backup on a...
Right. Yeah. Like,
that's like the thing, right?
And he doesn't have the, he had the 18 home runs or 1 year out of nowhere, but that's, you know, course home runs. Like,
didn't the Rockies also extend him? I feel like the Rockies extended him at some point, and I was very confused.
Yeah. He's under contract through next year.
Okay. Yeah. So not that long an extension.
Very reasonable.
3 years, $14.5 million.
Sure. It's very reasonable. And also, why are you doing that?
Because they did that.
Sure,
they do. Like, to be fair, I don't know what the obviously Dick Montfort is one of the leaders of the sort of the capital agitators within the ownership group, right? He's the probably the most one of the more anti players union owners, but he also
is generous with his own guys.
Generous, extending Ryan McMahon for $75 million, Antonio Sensatella, 40 or 50. Yeah,
you kind of just get tenure.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
the Rockies have nothing, but they're afraid of losing it.
Yeah, I talk with one Northeast scout that both of us have seen a lot of the Yard Goats over the last few years, and it just always is fascinating to both of us how many of those players, and not even like the good prospects, sure, like Brendan Rodgers, top prospect, Ezequiel Tovar, top prospect, sure. Even going back to, you know, Kyle Freeland and Germán Márquez were real prospects. But then just like every one, it's sort of like once you're in, it is kind of like you just have employment with the Rockies for a number of years once you're in the organization. And you'll get a cup of coffee, like Alan Trejo. He's just going to play 250 games for them over the next 3 or 4 years, and then probably play for the Royals for a season or something. And they just, it's like a jobs program for roll three prospects, basically.
So if it comes down to, you know, let's say the Rockies continue to be this unimaginable as that might be, and at the deadline, they're sitting there, you know, 20 games back. Who do the Rockies even trade? Like, they have essentially Kron is the only.
Yes.
Like,
I don't think I don't think it was a significant injury. I think it was like a soft tissue thing.
But he's on the second year of a 2-year deal.
They might just give him another contract, right?
Right. I mean, you could extend him tomorrow for all we know. But like,
Yeah, they could be the only team to sign an extension at the deadline. That's what they claimed last year, which was definitely not true.
Right. Charlie Blackman is a free agent. I can't imagine anybody's going to bust down the doors to give the Rockies
he's
enough.
He's the kind of guy that gets traded, though, right?
But just not by like the a Rockies. Bench
bat. Hey, that's the problem, right?
The Rockies absolutely will let him finish his career in a Rockies uniform.
Again, another guy they might just bring back on a 2-year deal. Bard's on a 2-year deal, right? So he just signed one last offseason.
Yeah, he's signed through next year.
Yeah.
I have a question. Is Austin Gomber just bad? Is he ever going to turn things around?
No, he's just like a he's both not particularly good as a starting pitcher and a terrible fit for pitching his home games in Coors.
Got it. So he's just like a fifth starter who's also with the Rockies, so he's going to have a bad time.
Yep.
Got it. Okay.
I would think that I understand the Coors problem is hard, right? And I don't envy them having to solve it. I feel like they shouldn't have guys that are bad fits for Coors that they intentionally go out and get.
This is like an interesting analytics problem, right? In a way, like you would think someone in the last 25 years, what was their first year, 96?
93.
Oh, they did the pre-strike expansion, right? Yeah. Hadn't been around that long. So you think someone in the last 30 years would have figured out sort of how to approach the environmental, and they had some success, I feel, early with the humidor, but just on a more, you know, macro level, team building in that environment. The problem is the Rockies never hire any analytics people.
Right. I mean, I know they've tried some things, right? Mm-hmm. They went and tried basically not getting curveball guys, especially after.
Yeah, they do a lot of sinker changeup.
They got burned by Mike Hampton, and they try for a lot of ground ball guys, but then they kind of occasionally forget. It's like
it's all these like second round college arms with like sinkers.
Yeah.
The pitch for like Michigan or Mississippi State, and like are just like they're fine, but they're not. I had a conversation with a scout about this. Like, do you really like try to embrace Monreal and just try to miss bats and risk giving up some more home runs? And his argument was you just want to avoid the 3-run homer in that park as much as possible. But also they don't sign pitchers like good sinker ballers, right?
Right.
This is basically what Sam Miller's annual essay on the Rockies was about. He was asking like how long it takes for a team to stop being an expansion team, which is like a good burn, but also wasn't really meant in a mean way. Just in terms of the fact that the Rockies have so many things to overcome, apart from the fact that you don't have kind of the historical status they have to play up in Coors. And you know, if you ever expand to Mexico City, something like that, the teams are going to have to adjust how to play on the moon even more. And the Rockies just have not yet figured it out how to do any of it right, basically.
And unfortunately for Colorado, like part of that is having other expansion teams, right?
Yeah.
You know, Seattle does not feel like an expansion team just because there are newer teams. But not because Seattle has actually been better than the Rockies. I don't think you could even argue. I mean, the Mariners have been around for basically almost 50 years now and have as many postseason appearances as the Colorado Rockies, who started, you know.
Yeah, the Astros were kind of like this before. I guess the Astros were like good enough in the 80s and 90s that they don't quite have that same stigma.
Yeah. The Diamondbacks being in the same division and also kind of more successful as an expansion team than the Rockies doesn't help. They kind of got leapfrogged there. And the Marlins, I don't think the Marlins are hard because they're weird. I don't think the Marlins are an expansion team. The Marlins are just the Marlins. Like they don't, they're completely different than everybody else. I don't know. I feel bad for the Rockies because I feel like they haven't had a chance to shed it yet. Okay, let's move on to topic number 3, which was different than how we originally started topic number 3. We were going to talk about the Blue Jays-Yankees dust-up, but it's a couple days old. And honestly, last night, as I was researching for the podcast, I started reading about this and my brain just refused. I could not make myself read about it because we're going to die. And we're going to die having forgotten about this. And I'm just going to forget about it now. I'm going to jump the curve. and forget about these things ahead of time. So instead, we'll enjoy the gift that was the Atlanta Braves giving us the fabric of our lives. The Braves have entered a new sponsorship with QuickReet. What was you guys both watched the video, correct?
Mm, yes.
Welcome to the show, QuickReet. What was your reaction?
This just feels like the most unnecessary piece of marketing. Some marketing firm was contracted to make this. I'm fairly sure. It's fairly well produced, so I don't think it was like an internal job. And it doesn't tell you anything about the product. Like I have no more information about QuickReet, which I did not know what it was until today either. But I have no more information about that or why they are a good brand partner for the Atlanta Braves than I did the 2 minutes and 15 seconds before I started the video. And yeah, it's not a very good looking patch.
It's a very ugly things go. Patch.
And it's just, all of these ads are kind of like stupid and garish and just like a mindless cash grab. And that's just fine, right? You know, I'm a soccer fan. I'm used to just having giant ads for gambling companies or flamingo parks, literally flamingo parks or whatever else on the much bigger and much more on the front of jersey. We're on right now. But they feel like they're going to great lengths to justify what is essentially just an advertisement agreement.
It's a declaration, yeah. A declaration to advertise.
Yeah.
A few weeks back, Effectively Wild mentioned around whenever one of the Spider-Man movies came out, there was an idea to do a promotion on the bags, or like Spider-Man would be on the bags. And the reaction was so negative that the league like not only didn't do it, but Bud Selig like, apologized. And I don't really have a point here. It's just kind of wild
needs to
that,
apologize for
that used to be the world people lived in.
I know. We, you know, selling out used to be a bad thing. We have turned on selling out as a concept. People need to feel ashamed for selling out more. I will say, it you know, QuickReet actually is a good partnership with the Braves. If you're going to need to build an unnecessary stadium, you're going to need a lot of concrete to do it. So it makes sense. Well,
is it concrete or is it cementitious materials?
It's cementitious products.
Oh, products. Yes, you're right.
That's a great. I was not aware of that adjective, which does feel like chocolatey. When something is not actually made of chocolate but is made to flavor like chocolate, they're not allowed to call it chocolate. Mm-hmm. They have to call it chocolatey.
Right. It's like the Pringles of cement.
Yeah. Cementitious sounds kind of mean. Like it sounds like a 17th century insult.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering if they had a copy editor look at this and they were like, do you mean contentious? Are people like really upset at your products?
Mendacious. The thing about the ad that struck me, right, two things. One, the only tie between the first, like the product is named at the 1:52 mark of the 2 minute and 2 second video. And the entire first 90% of the video is just Braves highlights. And the only tie between why this advertisement is even playing and what it's about to say is the fact that they have this shed with some Braves regalia in it, which, you know, like this charmingly 50s auto garage shed that I'm sure is, you know, attached to their 3-year-old stadium, but with a sewing machine, like one sewing machine. And then like, there's this one person in the background who's just clearly sewing on all the QuickReet bags onto all of the jerseys by hand using like this 1910 Singer sewing machine. But like they absolutely should have photoshopped the patch onto all the old highlights. There was a real missed opportunity there. Henry Aaron running around the bases should have had this flashy yellow as the randos mob him rounding third. You know, it's saying that they're part of the fabric of history. Mm-hmm. They gotta weave that fabric in. You gotta weave it.
Yeah, I think we've lost the opportunity to be kitschy. Like, not only do we have to have the ads everywhere, they have to be so boring.
Oh, it's incredibly self-serious. The video is so serious. I like that in the press release, it is the famous yellow bag. Jeff, you weren't even aware that the product existed.
No, I mean, it feels like something that would have been advertised on the Superstation in 1992, like in the Saturday afternoon Braves game, like along with like Golban medicated powder and Jim Palmer for the money store. Like that's the same kind of vibe.
I'm just saying that as somebody who has a yard and who is bad at keeping plants from dying, I buy a lot of potting soil. And I would, like, if you were to take the quick read off of there, I'd be like, oh, there's some peat moss. I did not say, oh, that yellow bag clearly associated with quick drying concrete. I don't know if they get to claim yellow for all bags, even bags of that shape.
If you're like hardware stuff, I would assume that more like Stanley, right? That
was my yellow logo, yeah. Or what's the tool that all tools have their own color, like they've they've color coded themselves. DeWalt.
DeWalt.
There you go.
Recognizing that this is sort of not useful with like why ads do things in certain spaces. Who's buying? Like who's seeing QuickReat from watching baseball and thinking like, you know who I need for my cementitious products? Like I need this company immediately. I don't understand it.
Well, yeah. I mean, at least it'll still be in business in 2 years. Unlike the Nationals.
Look, it makes its debut tomorrow. So probably the most exciting debut of the year so far, I would say.
Which QuickReat executive is going to throw out the first pitch?
All of them in a line.
Chief brand officer? It's got to be chief brand officer, right?
There you go.
That's got to be a thing.
He'll be wearing a yellow bag with arms cut out of it. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. Then we'll finish up with our last two segments. Okay, we're on to number four, which is Around the Horn. Not much on Around the Horn this time. First of all, we have one surgery and one theoretically non-surgery, at least so they're hoping. Kumar Rocker was just announced is going to need Tommy John because, you know, clearly that guy has had too much luck. I don't know if there's much to say about this one. It's just kind of sad. Like, this man.
Yeah, it's like Rocker's, it's unfortunate on a number of levels that Kumar Rocker has just become sort of this cipher for making points about, well, two front offices at this point. He's just become like a projection of whatever you think about the Mets and Rangers draft strategies from the last 2 years.
He's kind of the new Appel, isn't he?
Yeah.
He just basically represents, instead of getting to be a human being.
This happens like every time a player doesn't sign, right? People take it like personally,
right,
in a weird way. Or fans do take it personally. They can be like no good reason why the player didn't take the, I mean, obviously with Rocker, it's unclear if the Mets actually offered him, like made it, I guess that the term they used was like an official offer sheet or something like that. I'm sure they had discussions post-medical exchange, but yeah, it sucks. You know, I saw him last year in independent ball. He looked pretty good. I didn't know if he was going to be able to sustain that. And he looked pretty bad in the Arizona Fall League after the Rangers mucked with his arm action a little bit, and then he was pretty good this year in high A, and now he's hurt.
Right, and there's always, you know, when a guy gets hurt this much, like there's always people who are happy to blame him for his own mechanics, right? Mm-hmm. Even if like he's not the one being told to use those mechanics.
Sure.
But he listened, so I guess it's his crime. Yeah, meanwhile, Dustin May, who had been looking pretty good, left in the first inning of the Dodgers game last week, or last Wednesday, was it? And they say that he has a flexor injury, which also what Robbie Ray had, only Robbie Ray has the real flexor injury. The Dodgers think that he can avoid surgery with some rest and some platelets and maybe be back in 4 to 6 weeks. The Dodgers are, the third best team in baseball, mm-hmm. and also feel like they are one hamstring pull away from completely falling apart. They feel like they're dancing on the edge, and I'm not even sure what the edge is because the Padres are already like 8 games back of them, but it just feels like it's so tenuous. Maybe it's just because of previous Dodgers teams.
There's some inertia here, but also they just, you know, James Outman hits a grand slam and everything's fine. Like, that's just kind of the way their season has gone.
Yeah.
They're on 101 win pace.
Yeah, they are somehow. Gavin Stone will probably get the first call, right? Is it already been announced?
I don't know if it's officially been announced, but yeah. But they're also like, you know, Gonsolin's not the most durable pitcher in the world. Noah Syndergaard doesn't look like the best pitcher in the world. Yeah, the front of that rotation's fine. Like, I mean, Kershaw has intermittent back issues, but he's been more or less fine this year. You know, Arias has been fairly durable. They have other arms, but yeah, it just feels like, I don't know, we're going to look up at the end of the season. They're going to be 97 games in the one or the two seed, and none of this is going to matter, except Craig can be very cranky in G-chats for the next 4 months, regardless.
Yeah, there's, yeah, you've got the fun 97 win teams, and you've got the less fun 97 win teams. I've never been able to have much of a chance to root for either one of them, but from what I've heard.
You had a fun 116 win team.
Yeah. Yeah, I sure did. After that, we've got, we can talk about one thing from the Yankees fallout. The most funny part is the Domingo Germán ejection. He got a 10-game suspension for
not appealing.
Yeah, not appealing. Again, we got another, this is the new best shape of our lives meme, but now it's the stickiest hand I've ever touched. Mm-hmm. Our second straight this year, stickiest hand ever. So, yeah.
I do feel like MLB is going to have to go to 15-game suspensions for this, because I don't, like, I feel like they used to do 5-game suspensions for pitchers, for starters, for, like, you know, just random ejections and stuff, right? And then didn't they realize, like, that didn't actually do anything? Like, this is kind of like that. Like, you missed one start, I guess, but...
How much did Joe Niekro get? Joe Niekro got 10 games back in 1987 for literally having an emery board fall out of his pocket while he was being checked for scuffing the ball. So if that can happen, if you've never watched that video, do yourself a favor. Joe Niekro pulls his hands out of his pockets, pretending there's nothing there, acting exasperated and shrugging. And as he pulls them out, it falls on the ground. And he tries to cover it up with his foot in the most, like, as a man with a 7-year-old, the most relatable thing I've ever seen a person do. I will get away with this. Amazing. Maybe if Joe Niekro gets 10 games for as a 43-year-old, maybe we need to hit some inflation on suspensions.
I just love that. I mean, 43, and you're trying to step on something that fell out of your pocket like your mom just caught you with weed is just really good.
I did enjoy, like, Germán. It's the same umpire that told Germán to wash his hands or whatever a couple of weeks ago against the Twins, too. Like, that's like a bold move, right? To just double down, like who's the crew chief for my start? Saying, maybe take it a little easy.
It's like getting caught for speeding, driving on the freeway.
Yeah.
And then after you get back on the road, being like, I'll never get caught twice on the same stretch of highway. Starting back up. I don't know. I don't have that kind of hubris installed.
You also know Dylan Bundy, who's in the Mets system right now in AAA, also just got 10 games for getting caught with some sort of sticky stuff. He's running like a 12 ERA. So, yeah, do what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah. Because in this case, like, you know, that's the speeding on the way to the hospital for the baby being born, because if you... You get the ticket and you're like, yeah, all right.
Before this year, the only person, like, Hector Santiago was, I think, the only person that had taken a suspension for sticky stuff. And, like, yeah, this was there was a piece of it about this at BP a number of years ago, about sort of the steroid era and the inflection point on where it made sense to take steroids, where the benefits outweighed the risks of being caught and whatever. And it was like, you know, guys that were just barely hanging on, right? Because every day in the majors is a lot of money.
Right. Yeah, especially for Dylan Bundy, who, this feels like last page of the book. Okay. And so lastly, we'll talk about the Mets. Mark Vientos got called up. And we didn't get a call up for him because he played 2 weeks last year, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he got called up and immediately hit a home run. And then... immediately got benched. Whereas
we should point out the day before they called up Mark Vientos, Brett Beatty hit a home run and then did not get into the lineup.
I mean, that's how platooning works.
It is how platooning works, yes.
Which these are definitely platoon players.
Yes. And the Mets, by the way, against Taj Bradley, who is a right-handed pitcher, the game's going on as we speak, are starting Eduardo Escobar, who's much better from the right side and the left side as a switch hitter. Tommy Pham, who they signed to be their short side platoon DH. And the only interesting righties. Those are the only interesting righties, yeah. But neither of those are Mark Vientos.
So they're bench right now.
Yeah. I mean, it varies based on the handed disc. That's how platoons work, Patrick.
Right, that is how platoons work. But one of them is going to be a third baseman because the other one's a third baseman, right?
Yeah, I mean, Mark Vientos is a third baseman in like the Bill James,
yes,
Bobby Bonilla sense, but yes. Beatty pinch hit and came into the outfield and has played some outfield in the minors. He's not very good in the outfield. He's perfectly fine at third base. This is not an ideal roster construction.
Is Vientos as much a shortstop as Eduardo Escobar?
I assume Jeff McNeil would play shortstop if they needed him. He played one inning there this year. He came up as a shortstop in the minors. I assume he would play. He can still move he's still like an above average runner. So I assume McNeil would play shortstop if they needed an emergency shortstop.
Escobar is playing second today.
So. Yeah, it's a lot of choices are being made.
There's a lot of defensive versatility.
We should note probably one of the best wins of the Mets season. They came from behind three separate times on three separate home runs and then walked it off in the bottom of the 10th. And then, there's no attempt to capture any sort of good vibes on the 2023 Mets at any point in time.
Okay. All right. So let's finish it off with a game that everyone will hate but me. So I have been watching a lot of Taskmaster very slowly over the course of the last four months.
I already hate this.
Yeah, you're going to hate it. So what we're going to do this time, instead of the usual, statistical guessing games that are fun to do and easy, I'm going to propose something. So what we're going to do is I'm going to give you both 5 minutes and I'm going to give you both 20 fake dollars. And I'm going to ask you guys to find the best gift for me. That's the task. It has to be baseball related.
Baseball, okay.
And you have to be able to explain it because this is radio. So
yeah.
So you have 5 minutes starting now. Okay, so we're back. I hope that Jeffrey inserted some comical music of his own choice. So we'll go ahead and start alphabetically by middle name, but I don't know either of your middle names. So instead, we'll just have Jenny go first. Jenny, what is your gift for me?
If it has
a picture, you can give me a link.
I'm cheating a tiny bit because it's listed at $23.99, but it's not sold on eBay yet and ends in 11 hours and has been cut in price once. So like, I think that there's a chance that it works out.
So there were two rules and you broke one of the rules.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not too worried about it.
Okay.
I sent it to you. It is a Beanie Baby given away at the Kingdom on Saturday, September 5th, 1998, in a game against the Orioles. Chocolate, he's a moose. I don't necessarily understand why he has orange antlers. That's always kind of confused me. But he's got a little commemorative Beanie Babies card. This is sponsored by Wade Cook Financial Corporation. So MLB's kind of stepped up its game on that front in the last recent bit. Yeah, there you go. Happy Like I said, it's, but you're gonna have to wait for the price to come down a little bit here because I'm limited to $20. But
do you like to make your best offer or whatever? Is that an option?
No, well, maybe if I sign in. I'm not signed in. I don't know if that changes things, but it doesn't say here. But it, like I said, it's been cut in price once, so I'm confident.
Okay, so just to let you know that, you know, like seeing similar sponsored items, I see another one of those that is for sale for $900. And I see another one that's for sale for $7.99.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion among the Beanie Baby market. Like there's this princess Beanie Baby that I think at some point had something to do with Princess Diana, and people are like, oh, this is worth like thousands and thousands of dollars, but it's only like if it was the official one that has some plaque with it or whatever. And then there's a bunch of regular ones that are just, you know, a Beanie Baby.
All right. So I'm going to say, you know, this is a very thoughtful gift. Unfortunately, I have a 7-year-old, as previously mentioned. Uh-huh. And so therefore, I already own about 7,483 stuffed animals. We have a cabinet that does not close. Its only purpose is to stay slightly ajar because the animals do not quite all fit in it.
Right.
And I hate them. And then we try to give them away, and every single one is his favorite. It's a 8,473
tie. I never even cross that bridge. We're just keeping all
this
the
sounds completely fine with me. I'm fine with this all.
I mean, yes, but I'm the judge. I'm sure it'll fit in there, right?
I'm the judge.
I do just want to say, in order to plead my case, I found one that has a best offer available. It's 25 and has a best offer, so I think I probably could get there for 20 total.
Okay. All right, Jeffrey, your turn.
So for $13.49 plus $3.99 shipping, by the end of the month, you can have a copy of Beanball, the 1980s mystery novel written by Tom Seaver. I will read the description from Publishers Weekly. Seaver, the former all-star pitcher for the Mets, Reds, and other teams, and Reznikow, who's the co-author, author of 8 Whodunits, including Edgar nominee The Gold Solution, set their baseball mystery novel in the near future. Just before the first game of the World Series, Samuel Moultran Prager, the tyrannical, George Steinbrenner-like owner of the expansion team Brooklyn Bandits, is found murdered, apparently by a thrown baseball, in the depths of Brooklyn Stadium. The problem for the police and sports reporter Mark Burris, that more than 100 people were in the stadium when Prager died, and each had the motive and ability to kill him. The baseball sections of Beanball are not surprisingly solid and fascinating to any fan, especially the accounts of series games and the Bandits' unorthodox strategy. Unfortunately, much of the rest of the story has a goofy, frantic quality that verges on slapstick. Burr loses his hold on reality in the course of the novel, fearing, among other things, that his girlfriend won't marry him unless he gets a raise, the police will arrest him for murder, and then an intern will sue him for sexual harassment. 228 pages.
It gets 5 stars on Amazon based on a single review. The review says, "Great gift for my baseball-loving friend."
There you go. Great gift for my baseball loving friend.
I am a baseball loving friend. So obviously this is a great gift. Jenny, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid that Tom Seaver novel is going to win.
And, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
I will say, it kind of reminds me of that John Mulaney bit about how easy it would have been to get away with murder, like before the advent of, you know, like all this technology that we have now, like DNA testing and whatnot, because it said that there were 100 possible suspects who murdered him by throwing a baseball. And how do you solve that? And also, it seems like it'd be pretty difficult to murder someone by throwing a baseball. Like, I feel like if it was as easy as this is making it sound, we would have a lot more tragedy on baseball fields. So I'm just saying, you know, in terms of realism, a Beanie Baby exists in Israel.
that is assuming that reality is the preferred outcome here.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Nothing a Mariners fan wants to remember more than 1990s Mariners baseball either.
Yeah. 23 other options for youth purchases. Can get this book as low as
I'd go for the hardcover though.
I'm pretty sure it's only in hardcover. I don't think this made a paperback release.
There's also a collectible tab here.
Is there a signed copy? Because the Tom Seaver signed.
One is a first edition and first printing.
Once again, the question of whether there was another printing.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. The other one has no other details about why it might be a collectible.
One negative. One negative is that Herb Resnick. I think that this is probably less Seaver related than Herb Resnickow related, because when I click on him, his author page, we also get Murder at the Super Bowl, a novel with Fran Tarkington.
Yeah.
And the World Cup murder with Pele. So
I guess there was these are all like late 80s, early 90s.
Bad year for sports. All those happen at the same time.
I do like that the soccer ball in the World Cup murder is just a soccer ball with a stain of blood.
Yeah.
One wonders though, like you talk about how hard it is to kill somebody with a baseball. I mean, in soccer, they literally hit the head with the ball. Is it like a fake soccer ball that's actually full of stone? Maybe it's full of quicklime.
No, it's full of lead, and it's very long term plan.
There's no description of the World Cup murder, so I cannot help you with the basics of how you've done it. Also, it's 5 stars, though.
Yeah, 5 stars.
You mentioned Patrick the cabinet that doesn't close with all the stuffed animals. Don't let your kids learn about Squishmallows, I would say. Like, I'm sure they have,
but
don't let them start collecting them. Because I don't know if you've seen, like, there are, like, a lot of teenagers on TikTok who are just like, here is my room that is a Squishmallow room. I don't have it. They have it.
Yeah, no, that's too late.
My kid would love these. Yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah, and they make really large ones too.
Yeah, she found one at a garage sale for $1, and I was like, yeah, this is awful, but also a pretty good deal. So that's how it starts. Okay, thank you for joining us for another episode of Five and Dive, brought to you by the Baseball Perspectives Podcast Network. You can get in touch with the show at fiveanddive@baseballperspectives.com or by sending your energy out in the universe at the exact moment when things feel like they're at their bleakest. If you subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other podcast sources and enjoy what we're doing here, we'd appreciate it if you rate and review us. If you have ideas for what Craig should name his child, it's too late, but you should submit them to him anyway via Twitter at Craig Gold, CD Goldstein, just to annoy him. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you again next week.